Ephesians chapter 5 when I get started in there. And I got the title of the sermon is A Marriage That Lasts. I mentioned this morning a kind of a series on marriage. As I said today, we know that marriage is under attack because, you know, if God designed it, I'm going to tell you what, it's under attack. And boy, what an impact it has, Satan's attack on marriage. Our churches are made up of families and disruption that causes, that can cause. I was told you I'd share a little humor with you. If you're going to be married, you have to have, number one, you have to have a sense of humor. That's not one of the points. You have to have a sense of humor. It'll be helpful to do that. You know, you can tell a lot about a culture or a people or a nation by the music, particularly the lyrics to songs that become popular over time. I remember back in the 70s, I had a part-time job back when they had service stations. How many of you remember a service station? You know what? Some of you don't even know what I'm talking about. But they had service stations. That where somebody put the gas in, they washed your window, they check your oil. My boss said, check their oil, wash their window, whether they want it or not. You know, I mean, if they argued against you, didn't. We had three bays on the thing, Shell station. Worked on cars, oil changes, sold tires and stuff. My boss was a former NASCAR. He drove in NASCAR in the Lee Petty days, you know, Richard Petty's daddy, man. I mean, this is way back, and he is a country western, country music fan. So that's why you had NASCAR on, you know. NASCAR, non-athletic sport centered around rednecks. That's what it stands for. But he had the race on, but it was WCMS down there in Norfolk, Virginia. WCMS, where country music swings. That's what you say. Tammy Wynette was singing Stand By Your Man. You remember, huh? Stand By Your Man. We've come a long way, baby, since Tammy Wynette sang Stand By Your Man. And she sang that, and the divorce rate, unfortunately, has gone higher instead of lower over the years. And so it hadn't gotten any better. And so there's some country music song titles that are more likely to be songs. When you think about country music, and I don't listen to it either. Every now and then you hear a piece of one, this and that. A lot of them happen to be more about songs that go wrong than songs that go right. You know, I mean, that just seems to be, and there's a reason for that. Like I said, it does kind of reflect a trend in our culture. But just for a little humor. And like I said, you're going to need that if you're going to be married, and it will help you along the way. Some titles that didn't make the top 25 or probably didn't make the top 100 country music charts, but they got a little humor in them, dealing with a marriage, number one. And there's not in any particular order, although I do like the last one quite a bit. How Can I Miss You When You Won't Go Away? Number two, If the Phone Doesn't Ring, You'll Know It's Me. Number three, that's a joke, folks. You can go ahead and laugh. If I shot you when I wanted to, at least I'd be out by now. If you won't leave me alone, I'll find someone who will. Oh, this one's a good one, though, a positive one. Take me out to the cornfield, honey, and I'll kiss you between the ears. You'll get it on the way. I'm sorry I made you cry, but at least your face is cleaner. If my nose was running money, I'd blow it all on you. Here's a good one. I'm so miserable without you, it's almost like you're here. That's my favorite. That's the last one. I'm so miserable without you, it's almost like you're here. So I thought, you know, that's kind of funny. Just a little bit of humor there to kind of, you know, get us along before we get serious about the topic of marriage. And like I said, we know the divorce rate in America is outrageous, probably outrageous in the world. But I'll tell you what, it's not, and this is, you know, everybody's got statistics, Barna and all them, they do them. They say that the divorce rate in the church is the same as it is in the world. And, you know, I thought about that pretty deeply, and what I'm seeing, the sin rate in the church is about the same as it is in the world. Something wrong with that. All the way around. There's something wrong with that. Like I said this morning, I mean, when we got saved, God saved us from something, from sin. If you didn't get saved from sin, you didn't get saved. You know, and so, I mean, it shouldn't, I'm not saying we're going to be perfect, but for crying out loud, the sin rate and the divorce rate shouldn't be the same in the church as it is outside the church. You know, because, and a lot of it has to do with really putting our faith and trust in God and living our life all the way around according to the Word of God. According to the Word of God. And so, I want to, in Ephesians 5:22, we got a great illustration here. And let me read this part and tell you something about this chapter, this chapter of the book. Verse 22, Ephesians 5, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth and cherisheth it even as the Lord the church." I know I put 28 up there, but... And then look down verse 33. "Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife, even as himself, and the wife see that she reverence her husband." Boy, there's a good one. That one verse right there. And I looked at that. I'm going to tell you what. Ephesians chapter 5. If you don't have to do it now, but I'm going to tell you, I wrote this down. I think you ought to read Ephesians chapter 5. I put on there first once a month, and I scratched it out and put it every week. Every week. You ought to read Ephesians chapter 5 every week. I mean, man, it's talking about, fornicators and coveters and filthiness and foolishness and foolish talking and jesting and unclean and covetousness and, unfruitful works of darkness and talking about redeeming the wine and the time and not being drunk with wine wherein is excess, but being filled with the Spirit and speaking to yourselves in spiritual songs talking about the church and how Christ died for the church and how we ought to love our wives and how the wives ought to reverence their husbands. I mean, you ought to read it once a week, just to get on track so you know what's going on in life all the way around. My friend Donald Jackson and I that I grew up with, I was telling you about this morning, he's the one that's a preacher and as well and lived down the street. And we were talking about this the other day, and Sherry and I had ironically been talking about it just before that. We were looking at the people that we know that were unchurched, the ones we grew up with, unchurched, not saved now, not in church now. And you know what we were talking about? We remember back when they were kids, their parents didn't go to church. Their parents didn't take them to church. Donald said, yeah, and think about the people that got divorced. The people that got divorced, most of the ones of us whose parents did not get divorced did not get divorced. Now, you know, that doesn't mean, oh, hey, listen, I'm prone to get divorced because my parents got divorced. No, because we can break the cycle. But we're just saying this is, you know, the importance of the home, the impact you have on your family as parents, as far as leading them to God, as to showing your children how a wife should be, how a husband ought to be, what a family life ought to be. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect. I'm just saying we noticed this ourselves just talking about our friends that we've known since we were 4 years old, all the way up through. We look at it. I mean, Paul Stalls, my friend, his mom and dad, they were never in church, never went to church. Danny Sneed right down the street, never in church. And he's not in church now. Douglas Young, who called me up, hadn't seen in 35 years. His parents weren't in church. He's not in church. Donald, mom and dad went to church. We went to church. We weren't faithful as we could have been. We could have been better, but we went to church. We knew, and they went to church. I'm a preacher. He's a preacher. I mean, there's a connection here. Go to church, you're going to turn out being a preacher. No, I'm just saying, you know, you see how that is. So it's an important thing. And so when you think about marriage, listen here. It's God's plan. Marriage is God's idea. So it will work. It will work. My illustration for longevity in marriage is not here. How long have you folks been married? 50 years. There you go. Amen. Hey, give them a hand. That's something to cheer about. My good, you got to be the illustration tonight. My good illustration was, I think the Markhams were 56 years, I think is what they said. When you've been married 56 years, you can't make it back to church on Sunday night. But they're elderly, you know, and they probably weren't feeling well. Miss Markham's recovering and things like that. But so it's God's plan. It'll work. But it wasn't all real smooth the whole way, was it? If it was, you're the only one in the world. It wasn't always real smooth, right? I mean, it was hard to get her convinced that you were always right, wasn't it, brother? I mean, you just couldn't, huh? You couldn't get her convinced of that. But it wasn't always smooth. It wasn't always easy. But it took effort, you know. But, you know, it's possible. It will work because it's God's plan. I know it worked, and it does work. And listen, if it doesn't work, I scribbled out so many times on here because I said usually and most of the time. No. If it doesn't work, it's because somebody didn't follow God's plan. Every time, if it doesn't work, it's because somebody, somewhere along the way, it might be where you didn't marry the person that God had for you to start with, huh? Because you wasn't following the leading of God, right? Don't blame him or her. it might be where it is, but somehow it broke down somewhere along the way as far as the leading of God, not following God's plan. And so listen, God knows what he's talking about. I think a lot of times I see this in Christianity today, that people think, yeah, you know, God knows what he's talking about, but, you know, and then I got all these things, but I know how to do this, and I'll take care of this, and I can handle that, not only in marriage, but in other areas of life. You know, God knows what he's talking about, but, and I think I can do it better. Anytime you deviate from what God wants you to do, you're saying you think you can do it better. Anytime you get off the track of God's plan, you're saying you can do it better than God. You think you know, but it doesn't. God knows best. Listen, marriage is not just finding the right mate. Now, this is the key. It's being the right mate. Huh? Too often, you know, we look at the other spouse and say, boy, look, here's all their flaws and problems. Boy, if they get all that fixed, we'd have a great marriage. When really what we need to work on is us, our side of the coin. And it, you know, it's like if both of us will do it, you know, if I work on me being the best mate and my wife works on her being the best mate, then, you know, that's going to be a reciprocating thing. It's always the case. So we need to work, you know, we need to be the best us that we can be, you know, be the best me that I can be. And so focus on that. So I got 10 things. I'm not going to exhaust any of them by any stretch of the imagination, but they're 10 topics. It's probably nothing that you don't know. And I found out this about marriage and really about if you've been in church any amount of time, I mean a good church where they're telling you the truth, there's usually nothing that the pastor's going to say that if you thought about it, you didn't really already know. You know what I mean? Yeah, that's right, that's right. But this is what I find in counseling. Everybody knows, yep, you're right, but they won't do it. One or more or both, they won't do what the Word of God says to do or even the principles that are taught. Some things that go with marriage and even other areas of our life, it's not so much as a direct command, in this case, in a relation to marriage, but the principle is taught in the Bible, throughout the Bible, that would apply to your marriage. And so, and this is one of them right here, and this is taught in there, not only in marriage, but in every area of our life. The number one point, that Christ needs to be central. 10 things that you needed to have a happy, healthy, biblical marriage. 10 things needed to have a happy, healthy, biblical marriage. Number one, that Christ is central, not in your life. 9 things. I'm sorry, Eileen's back there waving at me. I thought we had 10, but I skipped the point. We got 9. A happy marriage. And so, Christ being central in your life and in your marriage. This is it. See, you could marry somebody and then you get later on, you think, you know what, we don't have that much in common. But if you both saved, you got the main thing in common. See, you got Jesus Christ. I mean, boy, and it's the great thing. And I know of people that neither one of them knew Christ and their marriage lasted 50, 60 years. Neither one of them. I'm not saying it can't be done. I know people that one person knew the Lord and the other person didn't, and their marriage is lasting 30, 40, 50 years. You know, they stay together. They got it worked out. I know people that both of them know Christ, and it's not panning out too good. You know, so, you know, it's not a guarantee every single way. But here's the thing. And you know, it's one thing. Everybody... everybody could probably honestly say that everything could be better. I'm one of them people that say that about anything. You know, that it could be better. You know, you got good, better, and best. Like I said, there's good marriage, there's a better marriage, and there's the best marriage. And so we're trying to elevate to the best. We want everything to be the best. And so I'm talking about that. You know, it's too many people, I think, are limping through their marriage. They're suffering through their marriage, or they're just kind of plodding along. And I'm not saying that there's not going to be some times when it probably feels like that, but I think too many people are going along with that. They're settling for that, settling to just hang in. You know, people say, we got that phrase, you know, how's it going? I'm just hanging in there. You know, they used to have that little picture, that little cat hanging on a fence, peering over. Hang in there, baby. You know, that's, you know, everybody married couple ought to get one of those t-shirts, you know. Hang in there, just barely hanging on, barely getting through. I don't think that's what God intended for us to have in any area of our life, honestly. God didn't intend for us to have that. God wanted us to get to best and not just good. And I don't know that limping through, plodding through, suffering through is going to even qualify as good right there. But here's what I do know this. The closer that two married couples get to Christ, the closer they're going to get to each other. The closer you get to Christ, because what happens? Fruit of the Spirit. What's the number one fruit of the Spirit? Love. There you go. You start love for the Lord, love for each other. I mean, this is what happens. It's just what happens. It's a supernatural thing, you know. And I'll talk a little bit more about that kind of as we go along. But here's the deal. It's amazing how following the instructions, particularly God's, because a lot of other people with instructions don't know what they're doing, but it's amazing how following instructions works out. It works out in every area of our life in the Bible. Following the instructions for holiness and righteousness and drawing closer to God and all those things, and following God's instructions for your marriage. It's amazing how it works. My dad used to be, boy, what a knucklehead. My dad was really pretty smart and used to work on guided missiles and radar and all kind of business like that way back in the day, electronics and for fun. He'd fix TV sets and stuff like that. But my dad, man, he was an old hillbilly, and hillbillies did what they had to do to get by. It used to aggravate me to no end. I mean, you know, don't need the instructions. Get done. 6 parts left over. You don't need them. Then it didn't work right. Then he's belly aching because it didn't work right. But then he'd make it work right with some jack leg stuck together apparatus that didn't need to be, and it would just get me, because I said, and I would get him probably, because I say, no, listen, we're going to read the instructions. They built it. They know what they're doing. And I'd get it together, and if something wasn't right, I'd tear it all apart. Even though it might be working, if it wasn't put together right, I'd tear it all apart and get it right, because I just wanted to be right. And that, so it aggravated me he would do that. And I think a lot of times in life, you know, we get it working, but it's not working like it ought to work. Parts missing, pieces missing. You can do that in your marriage. You can make it work, but it might not be working like it's supposed to be working. And you got parts missing and pieces left over and stuff you didn't get all the use out of it that you could, because, you know, it's not working exactly right. So Christ has got to be centered in our life. And I'm going to tell you, we're here, we're worshiping the Lord, we're supposed to be Christians. I don't, you know, wherever you're at in your marriage, I don't know, but Christ needs to be central in your life no matter what. Christ needs to be central in your life. It'll fix a lot of ills. A lot of ills in the family. A lot of ills in the church. A lot of ills in the world. It'll fix a lot of things that are going on in your life when Christ is central in your life. The second thing, and like I say, I'm not exhausting any of these topics by any stretch of the imagination. And as the series kind of goes along, some of this stuff's going to overlap. But you know how we got to hear everything more than once, right, to get it in. That'll be okay. Unconditional love, the second thing, unconditional love. The marriages that go to distance are characterized by a loving commitment that is based on a decision, not a feeling. It's got to be based on a decision that you decide, listen, I'm going to love this person. You know, what's the marriage vows? Better or worse, death do us part, right? That's a commitment right there. Sometimes I said, it's not better and worse, it's worse and worse. They say, you know, we're going through thick and thin. I said, how about thin and thin? You know, we ain't got to the thick, you know, yet sometimes in life. That happens. And so unconditional love. Listen, Christ loved the church when it was unlovable. When did Christ love you? When you were unlovable, when you were lost, when you were a sinner, when you were rejecting him, when you were using his name for a cuss word, when you were, you know, that's when he loved you. Christ loved the church when it did not love him. That's unconditional love. Jesus didn't say, listen, I'm going to go out and I'm going to die for all the real good people in the world. No, he said, I'm dying for everybody in the world, all the sins of the world, everybody. That's unconditional love. It wasn't based. Did we deserve it? No. No. Uh-uh. And if we're going to only give our love out when somebody deserves it, we're not going to be like Christ. Back to the Christ central part of your thing. So love has to be, it has to be a decision. You know, people talk about like falling in love. Like you're walking down the street and you just fell off in a pothole or something, you know. Yeah, I wasn't even thinking about it. I was walking down the road, boom, man, I fell in love. Ooh, woke up, man. No. That's not how it works. you don't fall in love like you fall in a hole in the ground. It's not an accident. Love's not an accident. Well, there it was. Cupid just flew by and shot me with all that stupid stuff. Shot me with a little heart arrow. No, that's not what happens. You decide to love. Well, love. You know, that's what you're doing when you're getting ready to get married. That's what you're saying. I'm making a decision here. That's why it's a commitment. You know, I'm making a commitment. As long as everything goes smooth. No, that's not what it says. That's not what it says. You know, we're making a commitment. What a marriage becomes is your choice. Marriage just don't happen. Huh? What do you think? I think about this. Well, you know, I'm going to get married. Okay, we got married, and I can see it now on your wedding day. You get married. Let me sit over here. Somebody. You get married, and then you sit down there. Okay, you get home. Man, this is great. We're married. And that's pretty much how it goes, man. I'm telling you right now. All right, what's for dinner? Yeah, I'm in the Lazy Boy. Hey, honey, can you bring me a cup of coffee? I mean, this is how it goes. I mean, you know, it's not gonna just happen. When both people decide that they want it to work, you know, it's amazing how human beings got this ability that when we put our mind to something, we can get it done. Huh? What's that one guy? He always says, get her done. We can get her done. Huh? If we put our mind to it, you just had two people that says, okay, listen, you know, get all that junk out of the way. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. We're going to do it. We're going to make it work. Scrapping life and death. I'm telling you what, man. You get an old, a human too, but you get an old animal in there that might not normally bother you, one of them little old raccoons or something, get one of them things cornered. I knew a guy one time had a bright idea. He threw a groundhog down in a gunny sack and decided to throw it up on his back. He learned that in real quick. He let go of that groundhog in a hurry, huh? When you get cornered, man, you get cornered, you can scrap, you can fight. I mean, you know what? If you get down there and you say, hey, man, Satan's trying to tear my marriage apart and we're going to put it back together and I don't care what happens and I'm going to fight to the death for it, you can get it done. When both decide it'll work, it'll work with God's help. It'll work. Just think about this. Suppose divorce wasn't an option and separation wasn't an option. I mean, you know, number one, probably be people doing a lot more thinking before they got married. You know, they'd say, well, listen. But just say, this is it. This is okay. You get married. Here's your vow. You can't get divorced. You can't get separated. Now what are you going to do? I mean, what are you going to do? Oh, honey, I got you boxing gloves for Christmas, man. We got boxing gloves for Christmas. We're going to go in there, all right, you know. And that's how we're going to do. No, what are you going to do? You're just going to have to make it work. Right? Have you ever done something? I bought something the other day. Things aggravating me to no end. I'm ready to sling it. But I can't take it back because of what it is and all that stuff. I just got to make the thing work. As aggravating as it gets me, I've got to use the thing. This is it. So now what are you going to do? You know, so you've got to make it work. You know, like I say, it's not going to just happen. You have to make it happen. Third thing is respect. Aretha Franklin sang about that. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. What a difference it makes when both husband and wives treat each other with respect. Big breakdown here. Big breakdown. Guilty. Right here, listen. Men, if you talk to your wives, or if you talk to another man, like you talk to your wife sometime, tone, attitude, you probably get bopped on the nose a few times, huh? Yeah, if you went off on your wife like you do, or on another man like you do with your wife sometime, listen, you'd get bopped on the nose. And ladies, listen here. If you talk to another lady like you talk to your husband, how many friends do you think you'd have? You wouldn't have too many lady friends. Not if you talk to them like you talk to your husband sometime. No, I know. How do you know? I just know. I know. Hard to believe. We had to learn how to value one another. You know, and even really in every relationship. Sometimes, you know, the older I get, the wiser I get. You have to learn how sometimes you just, you know, you need to value every relationship in life. Friendship, church members, really respect needs to really go all around, not only in a marriage, but just at work, human beings, other people. Things right there. I think that's an important thing. We need to think about that as we communicate. Another thing is, next one is commitment. Commitment. I try to get this across to married couples, people I'm going to get married to, or in the wedding ceremony. Got one coming up, talk about it. It takes time and energy and an investment. Like I said a minute ago, you know, you just don't get married and sit down and think, man. And too many people, I think this is what happens. They get married, they come home. What happens? You get in your routine, you go to work. A lot of times both spouses work nowadays, so you go off to work, you come home, and you get to go through the motions, you get supper together, watch TV, go to bed. I mean, that can get, 50 years of that. 50 years of that, that kind of get monotonous after a while itself, you got to really make it happen. Listen, for better or worse, that's going to take a commitment to fulfill that vow. Because worse might be more worse than better for a lot of reasons. Sometimes they're out of your control, health things and stuff like that. And till death do us part. That's a commitment. I like these people, they go out there and get little puppy dogs. Oh, look, isn't it so cute? All puppies are cute. I love every single one of them. The problem is they turn into dogs. It's the truth, I mean, it's great. Baby St. Bernards are neat till they get to be big St. Bernards. I mean, man, that old stinking breath of theirs, man, slobber all over everything, tail wagging, hair up and down, one thing. You walk in the house, it smells like, but people that love dogs, I heard Harold Vaughn preaching about it. People that love dogs, they're oblivious to the smell. You walk in the house, they don't even notice it. Anybody else walks in, woo, man, what happened in here? It's an old dog smell, man. I mean, all puppies are cute. And a lot of people, this is what they do. I've seen them. Oh, we're going to get a puppy. 8 months later, what happened to the dog? Oh, we got rid of it. Them people are prone to get divorced, I think. We got rid of it because, you know why? Commitment, time, energy, food, can't go on a trip, vacation. You got to find somebody to feed it and water it, watch it, take care of it, And then they got to go to the vet, for this and that, and they got to get shots and all that, man. Well, you should have thought about that before you got the dog. So a lot of times people do this. This is what happens in human relationships and particularly marriage. Listen, when you're making that commitment, it's not till I find out you cost too much, you smell bad, you got bigger than you were when we got married, all that stuff. It's a lifetime thing. Till death do you part's a long time. That's something to think about when you're standing up there. Till death do you part's a long time. It's a long time. It could. If things get real bad, it might be sooner better than before later, right? It might be it. So, listen, is things going to always go your way? No. Is it going to be, sometimes I think things get stagnant. I see this in marriages. Sometimes marriages even where everything really, the people aren't having knockdown dragouts. So they're not thinking about divorce. They're not talking about divorce. They get along pretty well. But they sit there and think, our marriage can get stagnant. That same routine, going to work, eating, going to bed, raising the kids, doing whatever you do. You get stagnant in whatever you do. So what do you do about it? Well, do something about that. You can break the monotony up do something that you normally don't do, a little trip, mini vacation. It doesn't have to be something too big there, but just always try to, have fun there. Dull times, sure, you're going to have us. Monotonous times, yeah, you're going to have those. To get through all that, it really has to, it already has to be a commitment. Well, we're going to get on through that. It takes commitment to do this and also to work through, the problems that you might have. That's just the way, it has to be. And commitment's like a, I don't know, how much, what's a lot of commitment to you and what's a lot of commitment to me and what's a lot of, I mean, commitment is total. Well, I'm my commitment levels, my meter's done got to the top or I've run out and commitment thing has gone down and I'm empty on commitment. I mean, no, it's all the whole thing. Then here, quality time. Quality time. Now, this is where I noticed from reading, studying, counseling. Men, if you don't notice already, men think different than women do. Yeah, if you never notice that, women, you think different than the men do. That one book they got out, men, women are spaghetti and men are waffles, and it has to do with how you think. Women are spaghetti because they're multitasking in their brain, which that can be a real problem. Both of them can be. And men are like waffles. We compartmentalize, get this, is this, that. And so then when you're thinking this and she's thinking that, now you're going to have an argument because it's not going the way, you thought it was going to go. And so your ideas of how, and this is what you ask somebody in marriage counseling, you get them off to the side. You take one of them in and you say, well, what do you expect out of your marriage? The guy will tell you. And then you get the girl out usually and you say, okay, and he goes out and you say, well, what do you expect? Seldom ever the same answer. You're already in ripe ground for having a problem because what he expects is different than what she expects. And if you're expecting two different things, well, I didn't know it was going to be like this. Well, now you know. And so, and the reason is because, and like what the male may think shows love, like this is what I've seen. Like the male says, okay, I'm going to do this to show my wife how much I love her, but that's not what the wife wants. But in the male mind is, well, yeah, but that's what I want to do to show you how much, but that's not what I want to show you. See, we're already in argument, right? That's not what I want. And the woman might think, well, this is what I want to do to show him how much I love him, and this is not what he wants either, because it's her idea of what she would want if she was a man, and she don't know because she's not a man, and he don't know because he's not a woman, although in this day and time, a lot of men are getting more like the women, so maybe it'll work out in the long run. But it's more than intimate relationship, going to work, coming home, asking your wife what's for dinner, quality time. See, sometimes what your wife wants is not necessarily what you want to give. Now, it's not the end of the world if you got to give it. If it's going to make her happy, go ahead. Like, see, sometimes a wife, you go to work. Say if you're a stay-at-home mom, or even if you're not, you come home and your wife says, hey, honey, how was work? Good. Some conversation, right? That's not what she wants. She wants to know, what'd you do during the day? And I know you say, well, man, I don't want to rehash it. Man, I had to live through the whole thing. It was just a cotton-picking day at work. It doesn't matter that you don't want to go through it. She wants to hear it. And that's going to make her happy. See, like going shopping. Man. We go down. Have anybody ever been to Hamrick's? You ever been to Hamrick's? Man, they got some good deals on Hamrick's. Mostly older people in there, by the way, but anyhow. You ever notice all them men sitting at the, they got benches out there when you come in the door, and they're usually, I can't get a seat there because there are already some guys already sitting in there. And so, I tell you what, I learned this. If my wife wants me to go shopping with her, I'll go, but she has learned it's probably best if she wants to spend any time shopping not to go. We go in there, and she goes, okay, I'm going to the ladies' clothes, and I go to the men's. And man, I don't really plan on going clothes shopping all that much, but I get into it if I get in there and get. So, man, I go in there. Wow, man, look at these pants. These are great, man. So I get me a pair of pants, and there's a good shirt right there, and I get my little cart, and I got them all laid up. 45 minutes has gone by. I'm ready, man. I'll go over there and find her. She's walking around with nothing. It's no fun, man. I mean, I'll tell you what it gets. And so then I try to be, but I tell you what, I said, oh, go ahead and take your time, baby. Take your time. Then I'm out there on the bench. Man, nice weather, isn't it? I've been talking to the other old guy. He can't hear, you know. But I say, well, you know what? I'm going to try to, you know, until my patience wears just as far down. I think we got to compromise. I'm going to hang in there as long as I can, but now I'm ready to go. And so, you know, and she'll say, and I'll say, well, you just come on back down here when you want to. And, you know, you do it. So, you know, you learn. But I'm just saying sometimes, like, your wife might want to do something. What I'm trying to say is that you don't want to do. But she wants you to do it. Go with her. For some other, it has nothing to do with probably what you're doing. It's just the fact that you're spending time. See, that's the key right there. And so that's where there's a compromise. This is where that give and take comes in. And, you know, like sometimes I know good and well, Sherry, I'll tell her something, I've done something. Hey, come out here and look what I did. Look how clean I got my truck. Like she gives a hoot, you know. Come out here and look at that. Boy, look at inside there. Isn't that thing clean? Look at that. Boy, you just, boy. Mm. So she comes out there and looks at it. Right, she got to get her, let me get my shoes on. She quits what she's doing, middle of doing dishes. Come out here and look at this. Come out here. She comes out and looks, you know, because she just figured, well, it means something to me. Obviously, I asked her to come out and look at it, right? See, so there's a compromise. You know, you have to learn. There's quality time can be, man, there's a big range here. Quality time doesn't mean you had to go to Disney World and blow $5,000 on a family, or you had to go to Hawaii, take your wife to. Quality time can be just right there at the house, or, you know, something. Sometimes people say, well, I sit there and watch some movies with my wife. I think, David, you sit there and watch movies with my wife. That would be a tough one for me, man. I'll tell you what, because I don't watch a lot of movies anyway, because I don't want to commit to the whole movie. And then, but sometimes we do. You know, you do that. Just something like that. And listen, so men, there's the deal for you. Women, let me tell you something right here. This is something that women, a lot of them don't realize. I'm not an expert, but I just know this. Women with children, young children, don't give most of yourself to your children and give your husband the leftovers. I've seen that happen. I've seen problems in marriages because the wife is consumed with the kids. And I know you got to be a mom. I know you do. But you don't have to dote on every little thing. They do. And the husband can't talk to you. And he can't get your attention, and he can't do. And then by the time you do, you know, he's tired by the time. So sometimes, you know, the kids, you got to put the kids on the back burner for just a little bit. Get them occupied with something. Hey, don't give your husband the leftovers from time with the kids. I've seen that be a problem. Now, if you're single, you're not married now, and you want to donate most of your time to your career, to your hobbies, to having fun, do yourself and your future wife and kids a favor. Don't get married. Just don't. If that's what you want, if you want to devote all your time to that, don't get married. You know, because you're making a commitment to a marriage. Then that needs to be the number one. You know, what if you had to choose between your wife and your job? And I mean, say a job you've been in it already 22, 23, 24 years. But you made a commitment. I'm gonna marry this woman. One flesh. Right? Now you got to make it. Say if you had to make a choice between your wife and your job, what would you do? Or ladies, I don't want to be, you know, gender neutral thing, right? Or women. What if you had to make a choice between your spouse, your husband, and your job? Retirement's on the line. Years spent. What would you do now? What's going to be worth more to you? Huh? That'll go a long way in seeing where you got your marriage stacked up, you know, in your thought. I mean, I'm not telling you what the answer is. I'm just saying something to think about. Another point, number five, I think, if I'm getting my numbers right here. I did? So we do have 10. Huh, okay. So we got 10. I knew I was right. Okay. Now we're on number six, right? Healthy communication. Healthy communication. Some of the loneliest people on earth are married people. Married in the same house, living separate lives. Communication, listen, if communication breaks down, the marriage breaks down. A lot of people, they don't talk about anything. You're at work all day, she's at work all day, you come in, how's it going? Good. What's for supper? Great. Nice weather? Good. What's on TV? I'm going to bed. You know. Man, I mean, listen, that can get, you know, that's, sometimes there might be nights that's going to be the deal, but listen, if that breaks down, and listen, there's all kind of communication. I saw a book out on the desk out there. I thought Brian might have brought it. It's Tony Evans, It's called Watch Your Mouth. It's a good book. He had a video on it on the Right Now Media thing. Watch your mouth, you know, how we talk. I mean, communication everywhere, not just in the marriage, but we already talked a little bit about that, kind of overlapped on that. But, you know, a lot of communication is not good. Heard about a woman who went to a marriage counselor. She said, you know, my husband doesn't listen to me anymore. The doctor said, well, how do you know? He said, well, the other day I told him that I wanted to be cremated. He said, okay, honey, grab your coat. Let's go. Yeah, remember that commercial used to be on TV, the guy's reading the paper, you know, and the wife says, hey, honey, does this dress make my rear end look big or I look fat or something? He said, you betcha, you know, he's not listening to her. She's mad right there. As I said, men and women speak different languages. So listen, and most men, if you've been married any amount of time, you know this, probably women too. I guess it goes both ways. I'm on one end of this spectrum here. What she's saying is not always what she's saying. You got to listen. You got to listen between the lines. You know, like, do you think this will be all right? Yeah, that'll be all right. Oh, no. That's not what you're saying. That's not going to be all right. Y'all know what I'm talking about? Will that be all right? Yeah, no, it's not all right. You know, you got to really listen to this, kind of look and everything, check it out. It doesn't, so, and I think it probably goes both ways. So you have to really, they speak different languages, so you really have to listen. Like the guy with the wife going to get cremated and wanting to get cremated. Have good communication. The next point is, whatever number we're on, a commitment to grow. Goes along with commitment, but it's added another way. Commitment to grow. Here's what's going to happen. You're either going to grow up and grow together, or you're going to grow apart. There's no neutral ground. You're going one way or the other. You're either growing up and growing together, or you're growing apart. You can't just get to a spot and stop, because you'll start going the other way. And listen, whether you're married or not, we grow in a lot of ways, physically, emotionally. Younger people, I tried to counsel somebody one time. They got so mad at me, and they kind of used another marriage as an illustration about me. You get married young. A lot of us here don't have to worry about this, but when people get married young, here's what happens. You're still figuring out who you are. Now you got to figure out who they are. You don't know who you are. And so as you grow, there's a lot of spiritual and emotional, that's what I'm emotional growth and changes that are taking place. And I think sometimes, even if you're not real young, maybe somebody that, my brother-in-law married Sherry's younger sister. She'd been married before. He had never been married. He was about 35 or something like that, and they got married. And I kidded with him a little bit, and I said, hey, D, you got to say some things you've never said before. I said, what's that? I said, I got to call home. I said, go ahead and say it. He said, I got to call home. I said, now you say, I got to call home and ask my wife. Never said that. So, you know, he had been a bachelor a long time, right? You know how the longer you get to be living, you know, you got your own little. And I said, look, man, you're going to get married. And I said, now you got somebody else to think about that you didn't have to think about before. And so, you know, of course, he was mature. He kind of understood what I was going about and, you know, going on. But that happens in any relationship. You get two really young people. You know, we're naturally self-centered. It's a, you know, sin issue. We're selfish. Now you get two young people put together, still figuring out who they are. They're naturally selfish. And now all of a sudden you got to think about somebody else. You got to put them first. It's against nature. It's against nature. All the way back, point number one, Christ got to be central, right? Because you got to have the Christ change. You got to put somebody else ahead of you. You got to think about somebody else first. You think about somebody else first. They think about somebody else first. Now we're getting on the right track. But see, a lot of people struggle here. Well, it's my money. Now if you get married, it's not. This is my room, my this, my that, my time. What are you talking about, your time? I got my time. No, you one flesh. You might as well just cut your arm off. You might as well just cut one of your, you're not going to cut one of your body parts off. And the Bible even didn't even talk. You're not going to cut one of your body parts off. You think, well, I'm cutting you out of this. No, you know, no. It's you know, it's, you got to have a commitment to grow. And I think as you mature, sometimes that can be a struggle, as both do that. And learning to put somebody else first is a maturity thing, really, a spiritual maturity thing. And it's a key in marriage for sure. God, listen, God uses marriage to teach us how to be unselfish. Who's going to get that last chicken leg on the plate? I tell you what, this is what something I do. This is a simple thing. My wife bragged about it. Actually, your sisters came up the other day. They went down there and stayed at a hotel, and it probably worked out good because I was sick the whole time, so they got away from me. They stayed at a hotel down in Roanoke and went to the Extraordinary Women Conference. I sent them a text. I said, I want y'all to come back Extraordinary Women. They said they would. But anyway, Sherry said she was talking to her sister down there. They was going to get coffee and that. She said, well, I'm used to my husband getting me my coffee. Now I go out there in the morning, man, listen, I don't do nothing until I get my coffee. Nothing. I mean, I go out there, stumble to the coffee pot, get my glasses, but I get the coffee. And man, all I want to do is make my coffee and get that first. Boy, that first sip, that's good. Smell it, I just kind of perk up. And I really don't really want to make her coffee. Being honest, and it's not because I don't want her to have it, and that I just don't want to take the time. You know, you've been sleeping all night. You think you wouldn't want to go sit down, but that's what I want to do. I want to get, so, but I'm thinking, okay, how much time is it going to take to set the other cup and pour the two things and put the sugar in the creamer, and I know how to make it just right, and I carry that dude back to the bedroom. Y'all didn't know I did all this, did you? Even got her, I got her a nightstand with this furniture set that we have real nice. So you got the thing that slides out. You set that baby, I turn the handle right around there and where she can get it. She says, thank you, dear. Thank you, dear. Huh? This is how you have a perfect marriage, man. Now, way down inside, you know, I just soon make mine go sit down. Now, if she's in there sleeping, I don't think she's getting up, I don't make it. I get out on that one. But I just go in there, all right, it's not a big deal. I mean, I don't want to make it. It's not like it's killing me, right? It's just taking a minute. She fixes my supper. So, you know, tit for tat. But, you know, it's just one little something, little simple thing. I got to think about somebody else. Think about somebody else. And so, I do that. Marriage teaches us how to be unselfish. You know, and so that's a small little illustration with that. Next thing, I got to hurry up. I know I'm taking a long time. Effective conflict resolution. Effective conflict resolution. Now listen, in all areas of life, a lot of people have trouble with conflict resolution. As a matter of fact, you know what most people do when there's a conflict? Huh? Well, yeah, nothing is what I was going to say. Nothing. They don't do nothing. They just think, well, we got this conflict and it's just going to take care of itself. It's going to go away. Or David said, run. Yeah, we're just going to flee. We're going to get away from it. No, that's what, they do nothing about it and nothing happens. And sometimes they, you know what most people's answer to conflict resolution is? Anger. You know how an argument usually goes? I think people think that the argument's going to be won when we can figure out who shouted the loudest. You know, like whoever can act like they're madder than the other person, then you win. If I act like I'm madder than you, then I won the argument. And if you act like you're madder than me, that's, we need to get a little one of those meters that tells how loud something is and get it in there and see, I was higher than you. I won. That's how they figure. That's not it. It's like a shouting contest to see who's going to win. A guy had an argument with his wife, and he when it was over, he went to work, and he was telling his friend about it. He said, man, we had a big old argument. He said, but when it was over, my wife came crawling to me on her hands and knees. The other guy said, what? He said, she came crawling to you on her hands and knees. What'd she say? She said, if you don't come out from underneath that bed, I'm going to crawl under there and get you. I read that. I laughed so hard. I had to stop studying. I was crying. I went out in the kitchen. Nobody was there but me. I said, I hope nobody comes up. They'll think I've lost my mind. I was in there. I was laughing. That is funny right there. Yeah. Come out from underneath that bed before I have to come under there and get you. That's conflict resolution, right? Listen, just learn how to work things out. You know what the easiest thing is? And you get in a disagreement. Stop for a minute. Let the shout meter drop on down. And say, well, let me look at it from your point of view. And you look at it from my point of view. You know, and see how sometimes, you know, and you may not think, okay, listen, I see how you're thinking the way you are, or I see how you're coming to this conclusion. And then the other person might say, well, okay, and I can see your side of view. It kind of balances, you know, it has a tendency to do that, you know. Cooler heads prevail. But sometimes that's what we need to do, is just try to look at something from somebody else's, you know, point of view. And I think that'll help out in conflict resolution a lot of times. Prayer about it. And usually probably before it starts is good. That's a good thing. And then another one is physical intimacy. You know, that's a kind of a touchy topic. People don't like to talk about that. Today, sex is a four-letter word instead of a three-letter word. And everybody thinks, oh, man, you know, it's a bad thing. Listen, man, God designed it just like he designed everything, you know, everything else. I mean, it was for marriage. It was for marriage. That's why God designed it. Now, I know people that have quit this part of their relationship when things weren't going well. Sometimes it's held out as a punishment. And listen, ladies, I understand that on the ladies' side of the coin, it's hard to be intimate when you're emotionally stressed or at odds, or however you want to look at it. I understand that. Things aren't going well emotionally. I understand it. But here's a verse, here's a chapter in the Bible. Here's something in the Bible I'll read to you. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. This is a good point in the Bible. This go along with marriage. 1 Corinthians 7, 1 says this. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, that's, you know, relations between man and woman that they're not married. Let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. Defraud ye not one another, except it be with consent for a time, that ye may give yourselves to fasting and prayer. So this isn't punishment. And come together again, underline that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. That Satan tempt you not. See, you can get into trouble here, this area right there. So you don't have power over your body, neither one. And you're not to, if you're married, and that's part of the marriage relationship, intimacy, you're not to withhold it, except it's with a time for consent that you may pray and fast, and you got yourself on that deal right there. And then, because of the temptation of Satan to tempt you to be led astray with some, you know, with somebody else. So there's Bible on that too. We got Bible here. And so, good point. And then the last thing, I was writing the notes down. Eileen was writing them down. I said, yes, connected to the one right ahead of it. It says, have fun. You know, have fun in your marriage. I mean, you know what? Listen, man, marriage can be fun. Man, you can have a good time and marriage. And listen, man, Sherry and I have laughing spells every now and then. I don't know. I think it's kind of healthy, you know. Like, if she had been there when I read that thing to me and she heard me laughing like I was laughing, she would have got to laughing like I was laughing. It would have been a hoot. I mean, man, you know, get to shaking where you can't talk. You can have fun. Listen, you think about things like, you know, what brought you together in the first place? You know, what did you enjoy doing when you first got married? You know? And I know life has pressures and obligations and things like that that we need to do, you know, things that we've got to, and sometimes pressures and obligations in life kind of sap the joy out of, but it doesn't have to sap the joy out of your marriage. Listen, you can have fun. I like that part in the Bible. Old Pharaoh figured out that Sarah wasn't Abraham's sister? I think it was, maybe this term was used for Jacob and his wife later on when he did the same thing, lied about who his wife was. It might have been with Jacob. He said, I saw you sporting with her, and I knew it wasn't your sister. It means they was playing around playfully, having fun, And I knew it wasn't your sister, that it was your wife. That's what he said. You know, have fun. You can have fun. It doesn't have to be a drudgery. We get these mental blocks sometimes, and the world paints a picture of what a marriage ought to be. Sitcoms. What's the biggest bunch of garbage it ever was to show you how a marriage ought to be? Huh? Ain't nothing like that. Shouldn't be nothing like that. Huh? It paints a bleak picture of what it ought to be like. It can be God's way. Man, God's got a plan. Listen, how to have what's the title I got? I need to go back up. I took my notes down too fast. Man. A marriage that lasts. How to have a marriage that lasts. This is it, man. Biblical. Does it take an effort? Yeah, it does. Gonna be some bumps? Uh-huh. You know, is it gonna, always gonna be just great? No. But it can work. Let's all stand for his baptized.